welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we have the 2015 movie Sicario, directed by really up-and-coming director Denis Villeneuve.
Not even close.
Hey, not even close to how you're pronouncing it?
No.
Denis Villeneuve? How do you do it?
The Denis, right?
Denis?
Mm-hmm.
Denis Villeneuve? Villeneuve?
Oh, Heidi, you suck.
Do you think that's a French name?
I thought it was actually Spanish, but perhaps I was sucked into the locale.
I want to say he's French-Canadian. And of the three of us, you're the only one that took French.
Yeah, well, I didn't.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, okay, well.
Well, no one says he passed.
Yeah, what's wrong with Villeneuve?
Have you seen any of his other movies?
I have not. But he has a very impressive IMDb.
He is indeed French-Canadian.
French-Canadian?
So I'm guessing it's Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve.
Denis.
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 Like Defoot Denis.
Like Denis Hurt, my chiropractor?
Right.
Yes.
Denis Villeneuve.
So tonight we're going to talk about the 2015 movie Sicario, directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Close enough.
Yeah, okay. He's the director of Academy Award-nominated movie Arrival and the movie Prisoners and the upcoming remake of Blade Runner, or not remake, but like sequel, Blade Runner 2049, starring Harrison Ford.
Is this the newest movie we've reviewed on the podcast?
It might be.
Maybe. Did you notice who wrote it?
I did.
Taylor Sheridan?
He's an actor
yeah.
known as Deputy Chief Hale from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
So, Brother Drew, I think this is on your list, so take it away. Why are we watching Sicario?
Also, welcome back, Drew.
Oh, sorry. Welcome back, Drew. I'm falling down on the job.
Oh, thank you. I put this on the list because I watched it a while ago. I think right after it first came out on video, I watched it because I heard it was supposed to be good. And I didn't know hardly anything about it. And I was blown away by this movie. I hope you guys liked it because I liked it when I watched it. And then the more I thought about it, the more it grew on me. And oh man, Jason's already getting his I hated it posture.
To be fair, that's his normal posture.
I suppose.
Wait, hold on. That's his scowliosis.
Bazing. Oh,
sorry.
Nice. Are you gonna edit in a drum roll or a rim shot or crickets?
Ba-dum-dum.
And actually probably a standing ovation applause. If you're in this room, you could actually smell the gears turning in my brain to try to find a pun as quickly as possible.
Oh, I could see it. There's like steam coming off your head.
Oh, I was shaking.
That's the diabetes.
So really, I just wanted a forum to hear your guys' thoughts on this movie. Because I really liked it for a number of reasons.
Brother Jay, start with the deal you got in this movie and then tell us what you thought.
Well, I bought it at the used music store that I go to, which I try not to go to very often because I spend too much money. And this time around, I only spent $50, but I bought this for $2 on Blu-ray with the standard def with it. So it was the double disc, the Blu-ray and standard definition discs, all both together. So
very nice.
And what'd you think?
It is a beautifully shot movie. It has a tremendously amazing and paralytic score to it that is chilling. The story I did not appreciate.
What do you mean you didn't appreciate?
I didn't like the ending.
Okay.
I felt the ending was cheap, unrealistic, considering the previous hour, 50 minutes that I just watched. I had a hard time with the opening going from the first part of the movie and trying to develop the character as quickly as they did, and then basically contradicting everything that she would have done to keep progressing forward. It felt really false to me. So
interesting. Well, we'll talk about that as we get to it. I love this movie. I didn't know anything about it. I have maybe an internal prejudice against Benicio del Toro, but he did really well in this movie. I mean, I thought he gave a fantastic performance, and I thought most of the acting was fantastic, with lots of faces we've seen before. And yeah, I liked it a lot. And I like the ending because it is a bleak ending. The director was quoted as saying that the movie is about the alienation of the cycles of violence. How at one point we're in those spirals of violence and ask ourselves, is there a solution? And his movie raises the question, but it doesn't give any answers. Which I thought was absolutely true.
Yeah, so the first time I watched this movie, again, without knowing anything about it, I was frustrated with how the audience was kept in the dark as much as the main character was, Emily Blunt, as far as what was going on and why they were doing what they were doing.
You think? I thought she was being used from the beginning of the movie.
Well, yeah, but it was obvious she was being used, but to me, maybe you were smarter, it wasn't obvious about how or why they were using her. So it made me feel that frustration going through it with her, the Kate Mercer character. And that I found that to be an unsettling experience watching the movie. So it was sort of that experience combined with, like you said, just the beautiful shots that they got in this movie. A lot of like dusk and dawn shots that you don't see a lot. Beautiful landscape and cityscape shots.
And in the special features, Denis talks about the reason he wanted the helicopter shots and the sweeping panorama vistas is he wanted to show the disparity between the beigey American side and the colorful Mexico side, and that it was really this strange kind of absurdity that the border was just a line in the middle of this land that disconnected one from the other. But he also wanted to show that the terrain had a depth to it that wasn't just easily traversed, that there was truly a boundary, sometimes beyond just the wall.
Well, and this takes place largely in El Paso, Texas, and across the border in Ciudad
Juarez,
which is notoriously violent. I believe the mayor of Juarez was very unhappy with this film in 2015.
I should hope so.
He said the violence was not reflective of current Juarez. It was more reflective of 2010 Juarez. But I think when you only have to go 5 years back to have one of the most violent cities in the world.
Well, it's one of the features of the movie I was watching, the extras. The mayor was actually present talking about how they were trying to revitalize the city and they were making it safer now and families were moving back and people were shopping again. But that they had a bad history. And there was a reporter that they also interviewed, and her figure was that when the president of Mexico started a drug war in 2006, 2007, and it ramped up. The turf wars heated up in Juarez because it was prime real estate because it opened into the largest, one of the largest drug communities in the U.S. So if you wanted to get your drug traffic through, that was where you did it. So there was constant turf wars. But at the height of the drug war in Juarez, they had at one point 10,000 unsolved murders in a year.
Oh, yeah. They still have thousands of factory worker women who just disappeared.
The mayor's complaint was not that it was an unrealistic portrayal, but his complaint was that they hadn't been like that in a handful of years.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give us a chance. Come on.
Well, and
come back to us.
I went just briefly to quite a dark place online. I just went to...
Is that the website, quiteadarkplace.com?
No, although if I could get that one. I just looked Google image search for Juarez, Mexico.
Oh, that would be...
All you have to do is add one word, and that's violence. And you can see some of the most horrible images ever.
Yeah, the movie violence was actually understated.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, lots of beheadings.
Yeah, they would leave heads of people out in public on display. Oh. And they would also list the names of police officers that they were going to kill.
Oh, yeah. No, and they had, there was lots of symbolism. You know, you've heard from Scarface about the Colombian necktie or whatever, where the Colombian cartel would leave a message by slitting your throat and then pulling your tongue through. And in this movie, they don't really address that kind of stuff. It's just more... You see some bodies hanging from like highway overpasses, but there's just...
Well, you have the opening scene where all of the people have plastic bags over there. They've been suffocated to death before they've been entombed.
Well, maybe suffocated.
Yeah, but that was Arizona.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was in the United States. Well, no, and there, I mean, they had this... There's a picture of a guy showing blood money where they had a body of a guy... A dead guy in the street, and they had basically money stabbed into him all over his body. Like, I know in Mexico, there's a tradition where at a wedding, a groom will go around and you'll pin money to his shirt.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, this was blood money, and it was just stabbed into him.
Mr. Stabby, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
You know who really seemed to like Juarez, though, was your guy, Jeffrey Donovan.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Jeffrey Donovan. Do tell.
He was touching evil.
Yeah, he was the I think he was CIA, right?
Yeah.
CIA, yes. Dude with the glasses who had some sort of mystery STD.
I love Jeffrey Donovan.
There were lots of really good character actors in this movie.
No, yeah, it was really well acted.
Yeah. So, shall we dive into the plot a little bit?
We shall.
Sure. I do want to finish my thought from earlier. Watching the movie a second time, having already experienced a plot, so not furrowing my brow the whole time trying to figure out what's going on, was a much more rewarding experience. I liked it even better the second time around when I didn't have to work so hard and could really just enjoy the experience of it. So I would recommend watching it once, giving it some time, and then coming back to it, because you will be rewarded.
Yeah, I want to watch it again, and I only saw it just earlier this week. By the way, it's available on American Amazon Prime for streaming for free, as is a movie called Sicario from 1995, which has no relation to this movie at all, except for the word is the same. Hmm. Yeah, the word means basically in Latin American, it translates most accurately to a hitman. And I believe the movie was actually a Colombian movie about a child Sicario in Colombia, who worked for a gang.
I'm going to guess this one was much better.
Yeah, I didn't see the other one, but I thought, you know, if I'm a completist, I'll see the original movie. No, it's not the original at all. So, however, it is available for streaming on Amazon Prime as well. So, anyway, we start the movie in Chandler, Arizona, where a SWAT team moves in on a house, and a really well-shot scene where they drive through the front of this house. And they're trying to rescue some hostages held by Mexican cartel leader Manuel Diaz, played by Bernardo Saccarino. And that's where we meet Kate Masser, played by Emily Blunt, who I honestly thought was Rooney Mara for about the first 10 minutes of the movie.
How is that possible?
Well, she had her hair pulled back. It, you know, if you see them...
Did you not have your glasses on?
If you see them together, they look a lot different. But Emily Blunt is a skinny white chick, too, so... Anyway, Emily Blunt we know from Looper and The Devil Wears Prada. And she plays an FBI agent.
Haven't seen either.
Yeah, an up-and-coming FBI agent. Known to have lots of tactical experience, so this isn't the first door she's knocked down. And her main partner is Reggie Wayne, played by Daniel Kaluuya, who we know from Kick-Ass 2 and Johnny English Reborn.
Nope.
And by the way, thinking about, because we are two-thirds of the way, at least, through the James Bond movies, and I know I wanted to do the Austin Power movies, maybe it was one lump or whatever, but should we venture into Johnny English?
I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's Rowan Atkinson. Mr. Bean plays James Bond.
Johnny English is daring. Johnny English is dashing.
Agent One, you overestimate your power over women.
I'd say that would be virtually impossible.
Johnny English is dreaming.
English!
Gentlemen.
Agent One.
Hello?
This is Intelligence Headquarters. Remember when I told you the only way you'd become an agent was if all the other agents were dead? Well, put some bloody clothes on and get over here right away.
Thank you, sir.
You're unbelievable.
Johnny English. A good agent doesn't need gadgets. The only gadgets I've ever needed are a sharp eye, a finely tuned ear, and a slightly bigger brain than is strictly necessary. Oh, well, none of us is perfect.
This summer, when the future of England is threatened...
Get out there and save your country.
British intelligence is coming.
I had his flat bugged.
Eventually. From the producers of Bean. Rowan Atkinson.
He might be a fool. But he's a fool who keeps showing up.
Johnny, be careful.
I'm always careful.
Oh. Johnny English.
They say that sea urchin's the ultimate acquired taste.
It's a personal favorite of mine.
Excuse me. Yes, I am sorry. Sorry. Johnny English, I'm a secret agent. Sorry, I am sorry. Sorry. Excuse me. Sorry.
Oh, no. No.
And I want to
no,
say
that sounds
that,
terrible.
I want to
no,
say
no.
that like Natalie Imbruglia is in the original one.
No.
Oh, come on. He is one of my favorite characters in Rat Race.
I'm winning. It's a race. I'm winning.
I haven't seen them, so I can't really comment, but in my mind, they get dumped into like the same mental bucket as the Ernest movies.
Well, he doesn't play Mr. Bean anymore for that reason. He's like, when you know, being absurd humor like that, he says once he got to about 50 years old, he thought that was just sort of pathetic.
Huh.
So anyway. So they do this rescue team. They try to find these hostages, which they do not find. Instead, they kill some bad guys and they find a body hidden behind the drywall, which turns out to be dozens of bodies. In this house behind the drywall. In a gruesome scene. Yet, again, if you look online, and I'm not saying you should, but it doesn't seem all that unrealistic.
Jason, what do you think about the action in this movie?
I thought it was good. My problem with the movie is not the action or the acting or the cinematography. It's the plot. That's fair enough. That's what I couldn't... It kept taking me out because... Purportedly, she's an up-and-coming go-getter, and she's successful and smart, and then dives in but doesn't take any initiative to actually find out what's going on and allows everybody around her to tell her, no, just shut up and do this, which is contrary.
Well, no, I, I think it's in line because they made a point of saying, you know, she's been kicking in doors since day one. So she's not like an investigator. She's, like Eric said, she's tactical.
And this is presented to her as, we've selected you because you're an up-and-comer, but your job is to hang around and learn. Like, this is the big boys.
If she has such a tactical background, and this is such a sophisticated operation on a level that we see, she's grossly underprepared and underinformed.
Well, true. But we find out why later.
But as somebody who progresses through a career to be that successful, it's counter. That it seems so counter to the personality.
Maybe. But like her partner, Reggie Wayne, was, although I think it was played a little too heavy. You know, he was the brash guy who wanted to know everything, who is super idealistic. And she was more...
I kept waiting for him to get killed.
Yeah, me too. And it's interesting because her character is, you know, maybe because I've seen a tiny glimpse of one paramilitary organization. You know, there really is a cliquishness to it. And so you don't really want to make yourself into, you know, you don't want to draw attention to yourself as different. You know, if your job is to shut up and learn and be the new guy, you're the new guy.
Yeah. And I thought Josh Brolin did a really good job of being like the sort of dismissive bully throughout the whole movie.
Yeah. It turns out I really like Josh Brolin.
And yeah, he's good.
He put his Texas on for this role because he reminded me of, you know, his accent he did in W.
W was great, by the way.
I don't know if I ever watched it all the way through, but now I'm intrigued because I think he's a good actor. But yeah, his character is not
he's like he's a paramilitary version of the dude.
No, but he's more sinister than the dude because he wants to be the dude. He wants you to think he's the dude. But really, he's playing all ends against the middle. He's everybody's friend, but he's putting pieces around the chessboard. Besides with Josh Brolin, who is this... Well, he's actually he works for a different organization. And that, it doesn't become clear, although they suspect what it is to begin with, but it's not super clear in the beginning what organization that is.
It's only not clear to people who aren't in the movie.
Well, he never actually says. She accuses him of being CIA, and he doesn't deny it.
Well,
yeah, but everybody knows.
No, but at the end, he pretty much says, when he figure, you know, to skip around a little bit, we figure out at the end of the movie that the only reason she is part of this elite band of people is because she's an FBI agent, and the FBI has jurisdiction within the United States, and the CIA doesn't. So she's adding legitimacy to his group to go from the American border across, you know, across the border. Because the CIA is technically, their jurisdiction is only outside the United States.
Yeah, so they picked her to be someone who seemed like she would be willing to sit there and shut up and go along for the ride.
Exactly.
Because that's all they wanted.
And then we meet this mysterious Alejandro, who is presented as some sort of Mexican federal agent. That's played by Benicio del Toro. Best known for The Usual Suspects and Excess Baggage.
Boy steals car. Boy finds girl.
Are you mental?
Boy, what a girl.
Guys make a great couple, you know. Like Bonnie and Clyde.
Boy gets girl.
You form some attachment to him?
She always liked this.
Excess Baggage.
That's a deep pull.
I remember actually liking that movie quite a bit, in an odd way. The Alicia Silverstone movie. So, she's asked to join this team, and the reason she's persuaded to do it is because this is an opportunity for her to actually get the bad guys, instead of just pick off these dealers one at a time on the American side. She can actually affect the cartels and the gangs. And the men responsible for the deaths of all those bodies she found in that house. And by the way, the shed in the house is wired with explosives, so they lose some agents in that mission. So she has a grudge. So she's on something of a hero's journey in this movie. And then we cut to Mexico, and we see this guy named Silvio, who's played by Maximiliano Hernandez of Warrior and the Avengers.
And the Americans.
Oh, and he's just in the kitchen. He's woken up by his son, and his wife is making breakfast, and his son's asking him to play or to go see a soccer match later in the day. And he's just your average, like, dad in Mexico. And you see him put on his police uniform, but that's about all you see. Is you kind of flashback a couple times, or not flashback, but you slide over to Mexico periodically through this movie to see him go about his day. But it's just his, like, normal routine home life day. He works weird hours, and he works for the police in some capacity. Turns out he is a state trooper in Sonora. So we go back to Kate and her mission, and she's going to take a jet to El Paso. But instead, they go straight to Juarez, in inside Mexico itself. And their job is to go with the whole squad of agents and soldiers to go and pick up a prisoner and transport him back across the border.
I don't think they went straight to Juarez.
Well, they went straight to El Paso. And then they were going to drive into Juarez and then drive out mm-hmm. with this prisoner.
Yeah, because they had some really beautiful overhead shots of the SUV caravan going through the border.
Yes.
Which I was trying to figure out how they actually did that.
They built a set.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah, that was amazing. I was like, there's no way that they could actually, like, mess with a border crossing like that.
No,
no. No, so after 9/11, no one is allowed permission to do any kind of filming on the bridge.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So they built the set, which is pretty impressive. I mean, it's very well done.
That's amazing. Because it's pretty
tension-inducing. Oh, it did. It looked realistic.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing is that this movie was so well shot that you got the tension of the whole mission. It had the right amount of tension, I thought.
Just the music and the caravan of black Suburbans filled me with a sense of dread.
When we get to music, the music didn't really hit me until we get to the tunnel. And I actually, like, wrote a note about whether it was whale sounds that they were using.
Okay, do you want to know what Denise Hall, what he told Johan Johansson or whatever the hell his name was?
Yeah, I think that's his name.
What music he wanted? I need a composer that will sound like Jaws.
Oh, let me tell you, it sounded like whale sounds, and I'll play some of it when we get to the tunnel scene. It's really great.
It was cellos, by the way.
Was it?
That dropping note, that constant dropping note, was cellos. Crazy. He actually had a waveform pattern they were showing. It was a great score.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it was. And you pegged it right. I mean, it's almost like a horror movie kind of score during these tension scenes leading up to the action. I mean, because this is a really simple... At this point in the movie, it's a really simple operation. They are going into Mexico to pick up a prisoner and to take him back to the U.S. But it is a harrowing journey. Even though not much really happens.
No, and you get a decent sense of, you know, Kate is not happy because they're going into a foreign country where American laws do not apply. Her badge means nothing in a foreign country. And any kind of violence or even any kind of notoriety they get is going to be potentially an international incident. But turns out they have something of an incident, but are told that, oh no, it won't even show up on the news. It's like, no big deal. Almost a no humans involved kind of feel about it, but really tense. I mean, I don't want to, we're yada yadaing a very, very tense scene, but it's very interesting. And I love the scenes of Juarez where I think one of the details is when they stop at some kind of, not a stoplight, but their car is stopped at some point for maybe other military vehicles coming in, and the camera pans like past Benicio del Toro to a wall full of missing people. And his wife and child are on that wall.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So it's just those little touches that are interesting.
And I love Jeffrey Donovan in these scenes so much because he's playing like such a goofy, nerdy dude. But when it comes down to it, he is a badass operator.
Oh, yeah. No, he is the skilled operator in this particular scenario. And he's controlling everything about their movement. So, yeah, it's very interesting. And they didn't dumb it down.
He's just trying to get back into the Matrix.
Yeah, so they get back across the border after, again, a scene where the shots are fired.
Yeah, Kate kills somebody in Mexico. Yeah,
not only somebody, she kills somebody who is either actually or just dressed as a state policeman or Mexican military person.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in Mexico, in America, you talk about guns and whatnot being prevalent. But what we don't see driving around town, although somebody suggests that it's a good thing because whenever you do, it becomes a problem. But you don't see military vehicles with like gigantic mounted guns in the back driving through the city in America. But you do in other countries.
Not yet.
Well, sometimes you do. They have them. Yeah, so they get back to the U.S. side and Kate is very angry with Matt about what actions they took while they were there and the fact that they were ignoring laws and whatnot. And then we have Alejandro coming in and tortures this prisoner that they had taken across the border. They don't show it, but they show enough of what's going to happen to be very interesting.
Benicio the Ghost.
Oh, yeah. He is so great in this because he doesn't say much. And when he does, it's very to the point. But he just has this brooding presence that's really, really ominous and great. I mean, he's a great presence on the screen.
I thought it was appropriate that they dressed him in white as he's the ghost.
Yeah, they did some interesting things visually with him, especially in that final scene with Kate.
Turns out he's the titular character in this movie, but we don't know it at first. At least I didn't.
What was he doing with that jug of water, by the way?
I don't know. It could have been some waterboarding stuff. It could have been just using it as a bludgeon. I don't know. But it's great.
Yeah.
The less they show, the more effective it is. So they basically find out, if I have the timeline right here, that they find out from this prisoner that if they didn't already know who some of the main guys were, they found out, like, one of the main guys. And they also found out the existence of this tunnel.
Yeah, I think they knew who all the players were, because this guy, the prisoner they got, was the cartel boss's brother, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're right.
Yeah, so they knew who he was, but what they wanted to get at him is how they were moving product and people across the border.
And the idea was that, and it stays pretty true, but the idea was their little band of people were going to just stir up shit and see what happened. Like, throw a firecracker in an ant's nest or whatever, and cause lots of chaos, which would have the gangs and whatever turn on each other. As well as they wanted one particular guy, the main guy, to be called back to Mexico. And he would lead them to this very elusive guy who is Fausto Alarcón, who is a mystery man they didn't really see. So that's the plan. So we see they end up casing a bank where they believe the money laundering is happening. So they basically took down this woman that was making deposits for the drug cartels. And this is where Kate is very excited because here's some real FBI work going on. You can, like, really develop a case. She found out, okay, here's the pattern, and, you know, they're making all these $9,000 deposits so that it doesn't have to be mandatorily reported. And, you know, they just had tons and tons and tons of cash. So she thought, okay, we can link people that way. But Matt has no real interest in that. All he's trying to do was take our main man's money away from him. And that was, let me see here.
Yeah, he was the main guy in in America, Manuel Diaz.
Okay, there we go. They're trying to get Diaz to be called by his bosses across the border, and then they're going to follow him to the main guy. Well, to get him to be called across the border, they have to create crap in his organization that he has to deal with. And part of it is just taking down his money. And it's explained to Kate that don't bother building a case because we were on shaky ground stopping this person anyway. And even though they got some money, there's going to be not enough to tie it to the cartel to actually be able to keep it anyway. So it's going to all go back to the cartel eventually. It's just, they put a speed bump in the road for them, which is frustrating to Kate. And she and her buddy, who has now joined the team, sort of, Reggie, are bitching about it, and they just want to quit, but, you know, they're on board for a bit. In fact, they do threaten to quit at one point, and they realize, okay, they can't. Actually, they do need them for some reason. But that's when Reggie, who has been in El Paso, decides to introduce Kate to a guy he knows on the El Paso Police Department, or State Police, or whatever, who's, Shane from The Walking Dead.
That's right, John Bernthal.
Also?
Pitbull Advocate.
Yes, also? He's the Punisher.
That's right.
Well, turns out you probably shouldn't set up your platonic friend with the Punisher.
Right, or a dirty cop actually being employed by the cartel that you're trying to take down.
Yes. So that leads to a very nervous and fun, well, fun is a strong word, a very interesting scene where she inadvertently invites this crooked cop into her bed.
There was no inadvertent.
Yeah, no, she did it on purpose.
Well, no. She invited him into her bed, but she didn't realize who he was.
No.
And when she figured it out, right, to her credit, she stopped all the action, but it became a situation. And I kind of like the way that Benicio Del Toro's character was interrogating Shane afterward.
Oh, with the finger? Oh, God.
First the eyelid pinch twist yeah, and the wet willy.
It's great, yes. So again, yada-yadding a very tense scene, but it's interesting. So they decide to, now they have enough to...
Have either of you seen Edge of Tomorrow?
Nope, but it's on my list.
Hmm. Nope.
It's really, really good.
Is Emily Blunt in that as well?
Yes, she's really good. She's really good in action scenes, as it turns out. And the scene with John Bernthal is good. It was a well crafted scene, and she was tough in it, even though she was overpowered by a much bigger person. But she played it well, I thought.
Oh yeah, yeah. It seemed fairly realistic and brutal. In the right way.
Right.
And Alejandro saves her life, basically.
Yeah, because he'd been following her.
Yeah. So they decide to attack this tunnel to make the drug cartel react. So they get all these, all these tactical guys all together from all around. Lots of different kinds of hats.
These are like military special forces operatives, like Delta.
Yes.
Delta Force.
Yes.
Yeah.
As well as Texas Rangers and the U.S. Marshals and all the guys on the ground on the Texas side, at least setting up this thing. But yeah, the mission itself through the tunnel is all Special Forces guys. So they are told to, they have to come along, but they're told to stay in the back, keep their barrels down, and don't shoot any of the other guys. And the tunnel scene is pretty great, and the music is what makes it.
The music is very important, but... the use of standard cameras, night vision cameras, and thermal cameras, I thought was pretty fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And actually, that was all, if I understand my trivia in the movie right, those were all practical cameras that they used. They didn't go in and add CGI to make the thermal cameras. They were actually using for real FLIR cameras.
Correct. They were actually used FLIR cameras. That was was fake.
It looked great. I mean, it looked so great watching it on a high definition screen.
They did have like one of the technical guys heat up his boots to walk through so you could see his footprints.
Oh yeah. I mean, it did. It looked great, and it was really it served to disorient you. which gave you a mm-hmm. feeling of being in the tunnel, which was nice. Again, you know, that was
yeah. They said it was really challenging to shoot in the dark like that because they couldn't light it like they would in the standard Hollywood, like they would buy moonlight. So they had to have it dark because there would be no reason for it to be light because then you could see people in the tunnel. But the challenge was then you had to make sure that you were truly using the night vision and the FLIR. But they made a deliberate choice that when you were looking from Kate's perspective, you saw the green of the night vision. But when you're looking from the other perspective, you saw the FLIR cam.
Yeah, because they had their FBI tactical gear, which was all puny and crappy compared to the Special Forces gear.
True. And yeah, the lighting is an interesting thing because you're right. The night vision cameras would react very strongly to like muzzle flash and things, bright lights all of a sudden in a dark situation. But the thermal cameras would react in a different, unusual way. So, yeah, they took some time and effort to make that happen. It's pretty great.
And Kate and her partner, Reggie, are the only ones who don't know what the real point of this incursion is.
Yes. Until it is explained to Kate after she has a confrontation with Alejandro. Because all of Matt's Special Forces guys go one way. Kate has her gun, her tactical rifle, damaged, so she has to stop and regroup and take out her handgun. And when she does, she's a little bit behind, and she ends up following Alejandro through a different tunnel than the rest of the group, where she sees Alejandro confront our guy Silvio, who is there to pick up drugs from the tunnel because he is, as part of his state police Mexican job, he is transporting big bunches of drugs. Well, Alejandro grabs Silvio to use for his nefarious purposes, and Kate sees what might be happening and is like, no, you know, you can't kidnap this guy. We have to, you know, take him into custody or whatever. And so Alejandro shoots her in the chest twice, which that was a great scene.
Yeah, very, very, very shocking yeah. when that happens. Yeah.
And they explain, as they're getting suited up on the other side of the border, they're explaining that they're wearing, like, the metal plates on their vests and stuff. So when she's shot in the chest and survives, it's explained ahead of time. So
I knew once he felled her that he did it just to knock her down.
Yeah.
That she wasn't injured.
Yeah, it's not trickery. I mean, they don't linger on it. He goes over to her right away and tells her to suck it up and she'll be fine.
Yeah, and then if she ever points a gun at him again, he will kill her. So he then takes off with the Mexican guy for parts unknown to Kate. And Kate goes back and confronts Matt.
Yeah, and the whole reason that they went into the tunnel at this point in time is because Manny Diaz was recalled to Mexico. So he was crossing the border in his car. So they timed the tunnel to go in and cross the border and get Alejandro to the other side while Diaz is on the way to go see the boss.
And they've been calling Alejandro, or some other side characters have referred to Alejandro as Medellin, as like a nickname. And it is, at first it's explained mm-hmm. to Kate after she comes out of the tunnel pissed and punches Matt in the face. Matt drags her off and explains to her some of the rules of life, one of which is that her only purpose there is to actually be the agent who can legitimize their little action, and or a member of the agency that legitimizes their mission, and that Alejandro's mission is to go and find the guy who, as it turns out, killed his wife and child when he was a lawyer in Mexico.
Prosecutor.
Yeah. Which sounds a lot more romantic than it turns out to be. Because, surprise, when the reason they call him Medellin is because their idea of controlling the drug trade is not to eliminate the drug dealers or to find a way to stop the drug buyers. But instead, he explains that, or it is explained, that it's crazy chaotic since the fall of the Medellin cartel. And you have all these rival gangs, which is why Mexico is so violent right now, because there's lots of different gangs that are fighting for turf. But back when there was one overwhelming gang, things ran pretty smoothly. And that was order. You could deal with order. So, basically, Alejandro worked for the CIA, let's say, and for also for the cartels.
He was sort of on loan to the CIA from the cartels in Colombia. Yeah,
exactly.
Because his sole mission in life was to get Fausto.
Yes.
And the cartels were also interested in getting Fausto, so he was working with anybody who would help him achieve that goal.
Yes, and he is not a romantic figure. He's a Sicario. He is a hitman. And the scene between Alejandro and Fausto and his family at dinner was like dark and brutal.
Yeah, that whole part of the movie was dark and brutal.
Yeah. Anyway, so I yada-yada a little bit of the Alejandro and Sylvia driving until they found Diaz's car and then pulling over Diaz's car. And it's all very, very stylish. Very well done, I thought.
Yeah, beautiful, like, night shots.
Yes. And stunningly brutal.
Mm-hmm.
So, later, Kate is back in her apartment in El Paso, and Alejandro slips in there, and he needs her to sign some sort of document saying that everything they did was legal. And she has already basically told Matt that she was going to talk to everyone she could about how wrong this was that they've been doing. So, waiting for her to get capped in this whole thing, too. But Alejandro has her sign these papers, and I like the ending.
I love this scene, because this is a scene I was mentioning earlier. It's shot in a way that Alejandro is always in the shadows. So when it's showing him, he's always in darkness. And then she's sitting in a spot that just happens to be like really bright. So it's a huge contrast between, you know, light and dark. And, you know, as the shadowy hitman, he's always in the dark. And it's, you know, it's an obvious visual cue, but it's really done effectively. And it's really a pleasure to watch.
I agree.
She's a law enforcement officer. She just had a really traumatic experience. She just threatened to tell everybody. And so she's not being careful and safe about her own apartment. And she's out on a balcony.
Oh, no. She's smoking on the balcony. And B, she's fallen apart. She's not she's not a robot. She's not a killing machine. She has tactical training, but she's just a person, which becomes very clear when you deal with animals now, which is the end of the movie. It's like, again, I thought right of Richard Brake's speech from the number station was overlooked by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts. But when he, you know, basically Alejandro explains to Kate that, you know, isn't it sad when you find out that you don't have what it takes to get the job done? Also, not really a gun guy, but when she eventually goes back onto the balcony with her handgun and points it at the back of Alejandro, who is walking down the parking lot, that would have been a hard shot to make. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was good that he stared her down at the end.
Yeah, I liked the ending quite a bit. It didn't bother me either time I watched it. I mean, I think it really does make you feel for Kate. You know, she was supposed to be the hero of the movie, and it did not turn out well for her.
No, it's this feeling of hopelessness. Plus, you go back to Mexico and see Silvio's son, whose dad didn't come home from work. And he goes to a soccer game, and they're interrupted at a fun sports moment by gunfire, which stops them briefly, and then they go back to playing their game, because that's just a way of life. So I like the fact that there is no solution to this, that you feel kind of helpless. It's a machine that neither we as the audience nor Kate as the character is able to change.
Agreed. Also, they were not playing on grass. They were playing on dirt.
Yeah.
Which seems awfully unpleasant.
Yeah, well.
Dusty. But dusty was a theme in this movie. There were constant window light shots that showed dust particles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this movie was really, really well shot. It makes me want to watch Arrival.
Makes me look forward to Blade Runner, which I was not looking forward to.
Yeah. So, do you realize that there is a Sicario 2 in the works?
I did not realize that.
Actually, it's not called Sicario 2. It's called, like, Soledad or something. I'm going to take a quick break, so talk amongst yourselves. But, yeah, it's following Alejandro's character.
Okay, well, good. He's the more interesting one. So I really recommend Edge of Tomorrow. It's a movie I did not think I was going to watch because it seemed like it would be way too Tom Cruise-y. But it's good.
I don't know anything about it. What's the plot?
It kind of has a Starship Troopers feel to it. I don't really want to say much more than that, but there's a... it's set a little bit in the future. There's an invasion by aliens, and they end up being in the middle of it.
Live, Die, Repeat.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous yes. name.
Yeah.
Ridiculous name replaced by a ridiculous name.
Much better name. Live, Die, Repeat is a much better name.
Yeah, because Edge of Tomorrow sounds like a soap opera.
Right.
So now Sicario 2 is going to be directed by Brett Ratner, so I think it'll be great. Sicario 2 is going to be directed by Joel Schumacher, so we're going to see Alejandro nipples.
So a couple of things. Silvio driving into the thunder.
Yes.
That was real.
Ah, awesome.
They actually had a thunderstorm, and they decided to do some shots before they wrapped up the set.
Kate smashing her head on the tunnel. That was real.
They talked to real. So Josh Brolin was actually talking to Real Delta guys as consultants, and they said he really kind of soaked it up.
I think Emily Blunt talked to a bunch of female FBI agents too, or a handful of them, and patterned her behavior after one in particular, who was kind of mousy.
And when Alejandro is talking to Kate and telling her that she reminds him of somebody very close to him. When they're having the conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, he says later that it was his daughter.
I don't think he ever says that, does he?
He does in her apartment. He tells her that she reminds him of his daughter.
Because the director alluded that it was actually himself. That he was warning her not to become him. And that's why he was telling her. That's why at the end of the movie he was telling her to move and go away, go live somewhere else.
Any other notes, any other trivia, any other special features?
Nope, that's all I got.
I'm really jealous that you had special features. This is one of those movies where that seems like the special features would be really interesting.
It was, because there was a whole featurette about how they filmed in where they filmed it. They couldn't actually film in Juarez because it was way too dangerous. So they actually filmed in Mexico City, and they filmed it in one of the edges of Mexico City. They said at the edge of Mexico City, it has the same look of Juarez, but it's safe. It was safe for them to shoot and film and not be in peril. There would have been no way that they could have safely accomplished what they wanted in Juarez.
Oh, no way. I mean, even Mexico City, although Mexico City is so gigantic that I could see that it would be easier to pick a place sort of on the outskirts of there. But Mexico City is a gigantic, massively populated city with real, like, it's like looking at Rio where you see the favelas. You see that sort of stuff in Mexico City too, as well as all this great colonial architecture. And it's funny, I felt privileged to go with Lena's family to Mexico in 1991, I think, at maybe 89, 91, something like that. But I wouldn't go to Mexico now as a tourist. Maybe going to some place like Cozumel or something, it was like an all-inclusive thing, but I wouldn't go to Acapulco as a tourist. It just seems like, I guess maybe if I was single or something, it'd be different, but still wouldn't be on the top of my list. Just too many unknowns.
I agree.
You know, because people do disappear. People from Alaska do disappear and are kidnapped. A former boss of mine at the hotel was kidnapped in Mexico and tricked her way out of a hostage situation and ran through the jungle for help. Spurred on by the hope that she could reach civilization and cigarettes, because she was out of cigarettes. So, Brother Jay, your verdict?
I'll give it a B.
Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, I love this movie even more the second time around. It does have a really obtuse story that you kind of have to wade through the first time around, but it is a visually stunning movie, and I think all of the performers do a really great job. I thought everybody was convincing and compelling, and it is a sad, bleak story, but it is beautifully rendered on the screen. I thought the action scenes were fantastic. I thought the pacing was really good. It knew when to be slow and it knew when to pick it up again. I really enjoyed this movie quite a bit. I think it's well worth the time. And if you have the time, it's well worth the investment to watch it a couple times.
Yeah, I agree. If you have Amazon Prime right now and it's still on their Prime list as you're listening to this, I'd say go for it. It's great. I was really surprised. Like I said, I didn't know anything about it going into it, except that I saw Benicio del Toro's face in the poster and thought, But no, he delivers. I thought it was great. So I appreciate being able to watch this. And I will watch it again, I'm sure. And I'll be, like I said, I want to see The Arrival. I want to see Blade Runner 2049. I want to watch The Prisoners. Prisoners. Isn't that the... is it Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman. Yeah. That sounds too miserable. I'm sure it's a good movie, but the subject matter just is not something I'm willing to sit through.
Yeah, well, I mean, on paper, this subject matter is kind of bleak, too. But, yeah, I liked it. It was good. Good stuff.
He also did Enemies with Jake Gyllenhaal, which is supposed to be an interesting movie. I haven't seen it, but I would be willing to check that one out. Have either of you guys heard about that movie?
No.
Nope.
I'm going to get it wrong, but I believe Jake Gyllenhaal is a guy who's sort of frustrated with his life, and he finds someone, also played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who appears to be like his identical twin, and so he sort of has this identity crisis, and he tries to track down this other guy who looks like himself.
Okay, so on the face of it, that seems ridiculous. I guess it's just called Enemy.
Enemy.
Isabella Rossellini. Can we agree that Jake Gyllenhaal in life is probably a weirdo? A la Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah.
Okay. Seems like it.
I don't know that that's true.
I don't mean like...
You mean like in a Crispin Glover kind of way?
Not quite to the level of Crispin Glover, but I can see elements of Crispin Glover in him. He takes these odd characters, maybe. Maybe that's a more fair assessment. Is he takes
also known as challenging roles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I'm not knocking him. I mean, weirdos are what make up the artistic world, right?
Spoken from a podcast of three weirdos.
Yeah, well, I hope so. That's my goal is someday to be a weirdo.
Where would you place Jake Gyllenhaal on the spectrum of, like, zero to Franco?
God.
Franco.
I guess I've met James Franco. And Shia LaBeouf. I think LaBeouf is probably currently the actual craziest of them.
Really?
Yeah,
why?
He just kind of seems like an asshole.
Oh no, he's a weirdo and an artist and yeah, an asshole. And yeah, he's done some weird stuff. I guess maybe I haven't seen Jake Gyllenhaal do performance art stuff like Joaquin Phoenix has done. Did James Franco do performance art, or was he just like a brash young guy who nobody ever told no, so he just dabbled in everything?
He did like a stint on a daytime soap opera, which had to be like some sort of performance art.
Okay, well, maybe.
Oh, so I always get Jared Leto and Jake Gyllenhaal.
That's another
confused one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would think Gyllenhaal is well, not quite down as far on the spectrum as a Jared Leto or a James Franco. But I think he's still on that spectrum. Like on that side of normal. I could be wrong. And, you know,
I really dug Jared Leto in Chapter 27, which is the Mark David Chapman, John Lennon movie.
Oh,
Oh, yeah. He ate himself. He ate himself into that role.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I don't want to like Jared Leto, but he's compelling to watch.
Yeah.
You know who else is also compelling to watch that I rearranged the calendar a little bit to accommodate? Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Like, he may have his own anger management issues or problems with celebrity, but he's a good actor. I recently was reminded of that. So we'll be talking about that in months ahead. But anyway, so anything else on Sicario before we go into housekeeping?
Nope.
Okay. Brother Jay, you want to start?
I was saddened to see that the Alaska Aces will be no more.
Yep. Our Anchorage's local hockey team.
That bums me out big time.
Well, they're not making any money. There's no butts in seats.
I know. No. You know, no money, no problems, right? So that was it. But I was thrilled to listen to Number Station. I'm interested to hear what Drew's thoughts are, because clearly he listened because we got an angry text. Other than that, I don't really have anything.
What's our movie for next week?
View to a Kill.
I am a little bit dreading Bond movies now, but I'm also interested in watching them for the same reason. Like, I'm still interested in comparing them to one another.
Well, I'm apprehensive about next week, or this weekend, I should say, because I'll watch it this weekend. But I'm apprehensive because my recollection is this is one of my more favorite Roger Moore. In fact, I think it is my most favorite Roger Moore Bond film. So I'm hoping it doesn't disappoint.
Oh, we'll see. I'm game for anything at this point.
Christopher Walken, man.
Excellent. Is this with Grace Jones, too?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And Duran Duran.
Exactly. So what can go wrong? Well, we'll find out.
I was going to say. Drew will tell us.
This is Roger Moore's last one.
Yeah?
Yes. Then we get two Dalton flicks.
I'm really looking forward into getting to the more modern era of Bond.
Yeah, me too. Because I don't think I've seen the Dalton movies. Or at least all the way through, at least that I can remember. So... shall I go next, Drew?
Sure.
So basically my housekeeping is again movies I watched this weekend, except for one thing. Jason and I talked actually for a fair amount on politics that I did not include in the Number Station episode, just because, you know, there wasn't really any need for it. I mean, it wasn't anything I'm embarrassed about or that I wouldn't want to share with you, Drew, or anybody else, but I think it would be kind of boring and it would make it less evergreen. But I know we had talked about Shepard Smith before, and I just want to give kudos to Shepard Smith for calling Donald Trump out on Fox News about Donald Trump's weirdo anti-media press conference. I mean, our president is scaring me more than I thought he was going to, but good for Shep Smith for saying what he believed. I like that. So... tip of the hat to you, Mr. Smith. You're still one of my heroes at Fox News. Perhaps my only hero. Oh, also, we can pour one out for our homie Alan Combs, who passed away.
Oh, no, really?
No, I had not heard that.
Sorry to have to be the one to tell you. 66 years old. Seems far too young.
Oof. Is this a formerly of Hannity and Combs?
Yes. Yes. And he I think he was still working for Fox News, right? He was all over the place.
I don't think he was in... I think he was... pretty much in the background, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, after Hannity blew up or whatever. He was always a token liberal anyway, even though he wasn't much of a liberal for the most part. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I don't know. Didn't know enough about him. But, yeah, a familiar media face. Gone too soon. So, okay, so two movies I watched this weekend that I want to talk about. One is I revisited 1973's The Exorcist.
Oh, jeez.
Because I got it for like $3.74. No, maybe I got it for $5 at Walmart, like the director's edition. And, okay, so maybe it's me, but...
yes, it's you.
Well, okay, Ellen Burstyn does a great job. Max von Sydow.
Ellen Burstyn?
Burstyn, yeah, what did I call her?
Ellen, I don't know, it didn't sound Burstyn right, though.
Burstyn or something, yeah. Yeah, Ellen Burstyn does a great job. Max von Sydow does a great job. Lee J. Cobb does an interesting job.
Robert Ebert.
Jason Miller, who plays Father Karras, did a great job. Linda Blair was a kid, so I'm going to give her a pass because she was a kid. But because I don't believe in demons or the devil, I don't find The Exorcist particularly scary. So whereas it's unsettling in parts, you know, I guess it just is never going to do it for me, I think. You know, I appreciate its the cinematography, I think, and I appreciate the fact that it's pretty well paced for kind of, you know, it's like it's a possession slash ghost story kind of thing. So it's a little bit of a slow burn in the beginning. But yeah, it's never going to be more than a B movie for me. I know there's lots of reverence on the horror communities for The Exorcist, but eh, it just doesn't do it for me. But I did see a Spanish film from España, Tesis, which is available, I think, on Netflix streaming. It's the American title is Thesis. It's 1996, and it's directed by Alejandro Amenábar, I believe. Villanueva. De plan. So this is a movie done by film students, I think, about film students in Spain, which has commentary on media in Spain. So you have to kind of know that to begin going into it. But it's sort of a horror slash thriller, and a brief it's like plot, not synopsis, but like it gives you an idea, is that it's a film student in Spain who's doing her thesis on violence in the media. She asks her professor to obtain for her some images of raw violence in the media, like Faces of Death style, real news media things that aren't shown, but are available because they were taped by state media. And separately, so he goes to the vaults of the college looking for tapes for her. And in the meantime, she also visits this other student who is known for having a vast collection of violent films and pornography.
We all know one of those guys.
Exactly. And this is all in the age of VHS. So there's, you know, lots of, it's all these things are on VHS tapes. So that's nostalgic. And early on, this won't spoil anything, the professor finds a for real snuff film in the university's media library. And when he views it, he actually dies from the shock. Not like a supernatural thing, but he basically has asthma and has an asthma attack because he's so horrified by these images. But the student gets a hold of this tape, and then there's some, you know, it's a thriller, really. So it's a fairly pedestrian thriller plot, but the character is at once, obviously she's anti-violence and how it's changed the media, but she also has a really high morbid fascination. The very first scene of the film is her taking the train into school, and they have to stop short of the train station, and they all have to get off before the platform because somebody has thrown themselves in front of the train and died. And she can't,
gruesome.
Yeah, she can't help but to like be one of the looky-loos who want to take a peek at the dead body. So that's kind of, you know, like her whole character journey. Part of it is that she is drawn to this violence and the violent people or whatever, as much as she's horrified by it. So Tesis or Thesis, we're seeing, it's interesting. You know, it's well shot. It's like I said, it's got, it's all basically pretty small, because it takes place all in a couple of apartments and then the college itself. So that's good. And yeah, so that's it. That's my weekly roundup of movies that I saw. Okay, so Drew, housekeeping.
So Number Station, did you watch it?
No. That was an interesting episode because I didn't even know what you guys were viewing until your episode came out. So that was pretty fun. No, this is a great episode. I was really hoping Eric's comment about the Fourth Protocol was in jest, because I still have never seen it.
You should watch it. It's only 90 minutes long. So
it sounded bananas.
Okay, so now I'm finally remembering the story. So you had now to go see Dirty Dancing while Jason and I went to see the Fourth Protocol.
Yeah, okay. Because you guys wouldn't let me.
Okay, but
even though I really wanted to go see the movie,
us guys would not be me. Us guys would be the brains over there. I would not have been cunning enough to pull it off.
You were in cahoots. He may have been the mastermind, but you were following orders. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with seeing Dirty Dancing as a 10-year-old with your mother and grandmother. It's fine. Everything's fine. But yeah, no. So it was fun. I always really enjoy the episodes with just you and Eric because I don't know what's going to be said. But apart from that, I watched several movies, an unusual amount because, as you know, I didn't participate in the podcast last week because I was scheduled to go out under the platforms on Thursday, which meant waking up super early because I had to catch a 5 a.m. flight from our plane. So I don't have to go to the airport, but I still had to be there by 4:30 at the hangar. So it was fixing to be a long day for me. But as it turns out, I didn't go. Because Wednesday night, I was walking with the girls and my wife out of the place where they take karate lessons. And there just happened to be like this little spot of sheer ice on the sidewalk that I didn't see. And it must have looked like horribly cartoonish, but I actually, feet fully up in the air, fell.
Ugh.
And cracked my head on the concrete.
Mom!
And my wife saw it, and she was horrified. And of course, you know, being a proper Anderson, I just popped back up and tried to act like nothing was wrong, even though it sounded like a shotgun blast went off inside my head.
Just walk it off.
Yeah, no, and she was like, she was responsibly trying to make sure I was okay, and I was like full on dad. I'm like, I'm fine, let's go. I'm fine, let's go. She's like, are you? Because we were in separate cars too. She's like, you hit your head really hard. It's like, I'm fine. Let's go. and she's like, why don't I drive you home? And I was like, my car's here. Like, that was the extent of my logic.
So did she bundle up her children in her car?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. She's like, okay. And, you know, so then I started to get irritated. I was like, I said, I'm fine. Let's go. I don't know how to be more clear. she's like, all right.
We are sometimes just like our father sometimes.
I was ridiculous. And I was driving home and like I got on Minnesota and I was like, this was not a good idea. This was really dumb. But I made it home. I was fine. And then I was still planning on going to work the next day. And Jennifer was like, she's like kind of poking me all night. I think she wanted to make sure I would wake up.
They're still breathing
at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So my alarm went off at like, I don't know, like 3:30 or something to get up and get ready. And I got out of bed. I was like, oh, this is not happening today. So I actually had to call my coworker at like 4:00 in the morning and be like, I'm not making it. And Jennifer actually had to go drop off some paperwork and some car keys to her hangar at 4:00 in the morning. So she was a trooper in the whole situation. But it turns out I probably had maybe a mild concussion. Didn't talk to my doctor. Called up my doctor. Talked to him about it. And he gave me like a whole list of symptoms. No.
Of course not.
No. I'm not gonna go see him, we talked about like when I should come in and what he would do if I did come in, and a lot of it is, they'll make sure my brain isn't bleeding, but apart from that, it's really just like monitoring. But he like gave me this whole suite of symptoms to look out for, and I'm like, I was going through them, like half of them I have like every day anyway, like fatigue, irritability, forgetfulness. I'm like, yeah, that's me all the time. But he did tell me some interesting things, like you're not supposed to take aspirin or ibuprofen if you think you have a concussion.
I definitely can see aspirin because it's a blood thinner and you'll have a stroke, right?
Yeah, no, same thing with ibuprofen, I guess.
Yeah. Well, ibuprofen actually causes clotting.
Oh, well, you can have a stroke that way, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the opposite. Is you don't want your blood volume changing.
That's good to know.
Yeah. My doctor tried to, he started to go on this monologue about, you know, it's really interesting for all the years of science we have behind us. There's so much we don't know about the brain. He was starting to go off and I'm like, oh God, you know, normally you're my doctor because normally I love this kind of discussion, but I think I have a fucking concussion. Can you just give it a rest right now? I actually ended up, my back was pretty bruised too, but I had a really bad headache that I still am feeling almost a week later.
Wow.
This is one of those moments where I felt super old because I slipped on the ice and missed 2 days of work.
Ugh, yeah. Wow.
It's horrible. But because of that, and I think because, again, my wife was trying to keep me awake as long as possible, we ended up watching a bunch of movies this weekend, and all of which were really good. We watched a movie called Train to Busan. Have either of you heard of that one?
Nope.
I don't think so.
It is a Korean zombie movie. I got it for the novelty of it being a like Korean like high budget production, and it was a zombie movie, so I didn't have really high expectations, but it was actually pretty good.
Is it available streaming or whatever, or is it
No, I got the disc from Netflix.
Cool.
You can get it on iTunes if you want to pay for it.
Sweet.
My wife isn't really a horror movie fan, but she watched it and she thought it was good. We also watched The Big Short and Spotlight, both of which were really, really good.
I have not seen.
I really
want to
see The Big Short,
but I really like Spotlight. I was amazed how well that was done.
Yes, it was. I didn't. Mark Ruffalo's like weird performance started to get on my nerves after a while, but the story was good. The Big Short was really good. I meant to look up to see if Steve Carell got nominated for an Oscar for The Big Short, because he should have. He was great. They're both on Netflix streaming.
Oh, cool.
So that's how we ended up watching him. We also marathoned Santa Clarita Diet.
Oh, is that a zombie thing too? Vampire
thing? It is. Zombie.
Ah.
Drew Barrymore, Timothy Oliphant. It was good. I really liked Timothy Oliphant because he was kind of playing against type. He was kind of playing this sort of emasculated pothead. So that was, and he did a good job. So that was good. So that was my week. Didn't go to the platforms. Stayed awake as much as I could. Survived.
Excellent. It's nice to hear it. I assume my sister-in-law would have called if something had been more seriously wrong.
Maybe. She would have called somebody.
Oh, okay. Well, here's a funny story. This is a Kelly story, so I'm not going to be able to tell it quite right. But so Kelly was at work the other day, and they don't have a private bathroom for employees. They have to use the public bathroom at Costco. So she's sitting in a stall, and the lady next to her, you know, and she's used to Costco public bathrooms and the fact that they, you know, since they sell hot dogs, sometimes there's
urgency issues.
Well, there's percussion in the bathroom, let's say. So she's in the bathroom doing her thing, and in the stall next to her, this lady is, I'll describe it my way, she was basically riding the fart train to BM Town and, like, grunting all the way, just making all these incredible bathroom noises, which, you know, again, it's the bathroom. You get it, but still, it's like, oh, my God. And then she lets out this big belch and immediately says, "Excuse me." which Kelly nearly had to leave the bathroom in a hurry because she's like, out of all this crazy noises coming out, one belch and you excuse yourself after that? So, anyway, that's all.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.